जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जनवाला गिरिवर दारी जय गोपी चन्नवाला गिरिवर दारी यशोदनन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीर वनचारी यमुना तीरा वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय विष्णु पाद परमहंस पवि राज कुचार्य शुक्र शत श्रीमद ए सी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्लोक प्रभुपाद की जय जय विष्णु पाद परमहंस पवि राज कुचार्य शुक्र शत श्रीमद भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की जय इस्कॉन बीबीटी फाउंडर आचार्य हिजमगरे श्लोक प्रभुपाद की जय प्रेम सिख हो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरी गौर भक्त वृंद की जय श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपिना श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरि गौदाम की जय वृंदम दाम की जय मायापुर दाम की जय गंगा माय यमुन माय की जय तुलसी देवी भक्ति देवी की जय श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन यज्ञ की जय गौर प्रेम नंदी हरि हरि बोल ओल गौर समरी ओतीस ओल गौर समरी ओतीस ओल गौर समरी ओतीस ओल गौर सोल गौर श्री श्री गुरु एन गौरंगा ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, Text 45. Nasya karmani janmado Parasyanu vidiyate Kartritva pratishedartam Mayaya ropitam hitat Nasya karmani janmado. Parasya nu vidyate. Kartritva pratishedartam. Mayaya ropitam hitam. Nasya karmani janmado. Parasya nu vidyate. Kartritva pratishedartam. Mayaya ropitam hitat. Please chant. Nam, never. Asyam, of the creation. Karmani, in the matter of. Janma adav, creation and destruction. Parasyam, of the supreme. Anuvidiyate, it is so described. Kartritvam, engineering. Pratisheda artam, counteract. Mayayam, by the external energy. Aropitam, is manifested. Him for Tat, the creator. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. There is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of the material world. What is described in the Vedas about his direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. Purport. The Vedic direction for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world is this. Yato va imani bhutani jayante, yena yatani jivanti, yat prayanti abhishmivishanti. Everything is created by Brahman. After creation, everything is maintained by Brahman. And after annihilation, everything is conserved in Brahman. Gross materialists without any knowledge of Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan conclude material nature to be the ultimate cause of the material manifestation. And the modern scientist also shares this view that the material nature is the ultimate cause of all the manifestations of the material world. This view is refuted by all Vedic literature. The Vedanta philosophy mentions that Brahman is the fountainhead of all creation, maintenance, and destruction. And Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentation of the Vedanta philosophy, says, Janmadi asya yato nyayad itarata sharteshu abhijana swarat. Inert matter is undoubtedly energy with the potential to interact, but it has no initiative of its own. Srimad Bhagavatam therefore comments on the aphorism Janmadi Asya by saying Abhijana and Swarat. The Supreme Brahman is not inert matter, but he is Supreme Consciousness and is independent. Therefore, inert matter cannot be the ultimate cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. Superficially, material nature appears to be the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction. But material nature is set into motion for creation by the Supreme Conscious Being, the Personality of Godhead. He is the background of all creation, maintenance, and destruction. And this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10. Maya Yakshena Prakriti Suyate Sa Characharam Hetu Nanina Kaunteya Jagat Vipari Vartate. The material nature is one of the energies of the Lord, and she can work under the direction of the Lord at Yakshena. When the Lord throws his transcendental glance over the material nature, then only can the material nature act as the father contacts the mother, who is then able to conceive the child. Although it appears to the layman that the mother gives birth to the child, the experienced man knows that the father gives birth to the child. The material nature therefore produces the moving and standing manifestations of the material world after being contacted by the Supreme Father and not independently. Considering material nature to be the cause of creation, maintenance, etc., is called the logic of nipples on the neck of a goat. The Chaitanya Charitamrita by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes this logic of Ajagalasthana Nyaya as follows, as explained by His Divine Grace Shishimar Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. The material nature, as the material cause, is known as Pradhanam, and as efficient cause is known as Maya. But since it is an inert matter, it is not the remote cause of creation. Kaviraj Goswami states as follows. Atteva Krishna Mula Jagat Karana Prakriti Karana Jayache Ajagalasthana. So I was told to stop here, and tomorrow we will continue with the rest of the purport. Nasya karmani janmadu parasyanu vidiyate kartritva pratishedartam maya yaropitam hitat. There is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of the material world. What is described in the Vedas about his direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sinubhayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So we have a wonderful verse, essentially when you look, we are almost at the end of second canto, can you believe it? Such an amazing book. There's so many wonderful chapters in this second canto that are full of lessons for us sadhakas. And as we have discussed in the previous verses, basically after describing the process of creation, maintenance and destruction, Srila Shukadeva Goswami is now kind of like winding down this chapter with a few concluding points. And as it was discussed yesterday by Nagaraj Prabhu very nicely, the verse was basically saying that the process of creation, maintenance, and destruction, that's not all that the Lord does. You know, it is there and it's necessary to understand it. But then it's described that pure devotee is actually seeking more. He wants to see actually more intimate activities of the Lord and what are his actual pastimes. So Prabhupada is starting this verse, basically he's saying that materialistic people who do not accept Vedic authority, basically he is saying that gross materialists without any knowledge of Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan conclude material nature to be the ultimate cause. And then, basically, it is said, this view is refuted by all Vedic literature. So the Vedas don't accept that conclusion. And as the verse is saying today, basically there is no direct engineering of Lord, you know, directly doing all these activities of creating and maintaining and annihilating the universe. But basically it is there for the purpose of simply to counteract that misconception. So when we think about general view that is present in materialistic society, people who do not accept Vedic authority as the ultimate source, essentially what they're basing their opinion on, it is based on their limited sense perception. And how is it possible that with limited senses one could gain perfect knowledge? It's not possible, because there is going to be always defect due to our limited ability to actually perceive and understand the things that are beyond our scope of understanding. One time there was an experiment done, and actually the scientists, they spent large sums of money in doing these frivolous experiments. So the idea was they wanted to find out what animal would be the last one to find the water if it had human mind. So they did, you know, deep analyzing, debating among themselves back and forth, and they kind of considered all different angles, could be this one, could be that one, and it, you know, went on for quite some time. And finally they came to conclusion And what would you say, which animal they consider to be the last one to find the water if it had a human brain? Kalindi, you said something? No? So they came to conclusion that actually fish would be the last one to find the water. Can you imagine that? Like, and the reasoning is actually quite interesting, because fish is always within that element of water. It's always surrounded by water. Therefore, it cannot understand that there is actually a reality different than its own, you know, home environment in which it's, you know, being born, being raised, and grows and then dies. So similarly, the human being, the conditioned soul that's been traveling from one life to another, is always swimming in this material energy that's comprised of the three modes of energy, three modes of material nature. So unless one approaches the higher authority, there is no chance of actually realizing that there is different reality than what we perceive with our eyes, with our senses. And therefore the Vedas instruct us to actually seek the knowledge from the higher source, from the higher authority. So Bhagavad Gita actually very nicely describes, and actually Krishna, by talking to Arjuna, he's actually confirming the same thing that we are finding in Srimad Bhagavatam. Right there in the ninth chapter of Gita, basically Krishna starts the chapter and saying, he's saying, Arjuna, because you are non-envious of me, I'm going to give you the most confidential knowledge. And I was thinking, how it is most confidential? I mean, we widely distribute Gita, and it's published on the internet, and all these verses, they're all there. But then I came to conclusion, yeah, it is confidential, because unless one surrenders to the Lord, unless one is actually with that attitude, like Arjuna, with no envy in a heart, one cannot understand these very confidential points here. So Krishna is saying to Arjuna, understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. And then he said, O son of Kunti, at the end of millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature, and at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. So Krishna says, I, you know, means person. It's not just some hocus pocus. And then he's saying, O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I'm ever detached from all these material activities, seated as neutral. So the verse actually Prabhupada is mentioning in his purport today, and this is also from the ninth chapter of Gita. Maya dhyakshina prakriti suyati sa characharam hetu nanina kaunteya jagat vipari vartate. So the material nature is one of the energies of the Lord, and she can work under the direction of the Lord when the Lord throws his transcendental glance. So I was thinking about that, how powerful Lord's glance is. I mean, just when you come in front of Radhe Shyam and you look at them, and it's... So anyhow, we find very, very wonderful example. Basically, Brahmana Sudam Vipra, he was very simple Brahmana. And as you know, he was actually childhood schoolmate of Krishna. They went to the same Gurukul, they were under the same guru in the Gurukul. And many years afterwards, basically, this poor Brahmana, he was living very simple life, and he was extremely detached, extremely renounced, and to the point that one day his wife said, "Oh, my dear husband, you know, why don't you visit your old friend Krishna, who now resides in Dwaraka?" And his wife, she was actually very, very respectful and very also advanced. It's not like she was like, "Hey, you know, we are broke." Not at all. It wasn't like that. But she did it out of her concern for her husband. Basically, she wanted to serve her husband. And she was sad to see her husband struggling. And basically, they were so impoverished. It's described they were very skinny and they were living in very, very difficult conditions. So his wife approached him and she said, "Why don't you go and visit your old friend Krishna in Dwaraka? And he knows the heart of all his devotees, and I'm sure he will help you." And first he was reluctant, and he was thinking, "There is no need to ask Lord for anything. Krishna knows all our needs, all our desires. There's no need to ask him." But then he thought, actually, at the same time, if I do go, I will have a chance to have a darshan of the Lord. I will have a chance to see the Lord. And, you know, who can miss such opportunity? So then he decided to go and visit Krishna. And he said, "My dear wife, do you have something I could bring to the Lord as a gift? You know, I can't go empty-handed." And can you imagine, they didn't really have anything. So she had to go to the neighbor's house and ask, you know, for a little bit of a chipped rice. So she came back and there was barely like four palm hands of chipped rice. And she wrapped it in a handkerchief. You know, there was no like fancy wrapping or anything like that. Very simple. I mean, they were so poor. And Sudama Vipra is going to Dwaraka. As he comes there, it's a huge, huge palace. There is like three sets of gates guarded by soldiers. Not anybody can just walk in. There's no way. But Brahmanas, they're welcome. Brahmanas are welcome to come in anytime. Krishna is so kind and merciful to the Brahmanas. So he goes in, he goes through one gate, second gate, third gate. And then as he enters, he actually sees 16,000 palaces. Krishna, you know, he married 16,000 queens, and each of them, you know, it's not like they were sharing the same house. They had a separate palace for each of them. So as he entered into one of the palaces, basically Krishna immediately saw him. And when he came, Krishna was sitting on Rukmini's bed and, you know, just leisurely relaxing. But as soon as he saw Sudama Vipra, he jumped up and he came to embrace him. And he said, "My dear friend, I'm so happy to see you." And then he embraced him. And it's described, Krishna does not embrace just, you know, anybody. Basically, he only embraces Lord Balaram and Rukmini and nobody else. But this Brahmana, he embraced him, big hug. And then he seated him on the bed, where basically it's his own bed. But no concerns. Krishna is so personal. And as he was seated, basically it's described they worshipped him. Even Rukmini Devi, she was fanning this Brahmana with chamara. And all the ladies, they were shocked to see that, because they were wondering, like, who is this person? like how is it possible that Krishna is so receptive to him? He must not be ordinary jiva. He must have performed extreme pious activities to deserve this. And they were looking, you know, in bewilderment. So after a while, Krishna and Sudama there, they were having nice chit-chat. They were talking about the old days, and Krishna was saying, do you remember when we were in the forest, deep in the forest, and that huge storm came, sandstorm, and then there was a huge rainfall, and we lost our way back to our guru's house. And we spent the night in the forest, deep in the forest, and we were holding hands because we were afraid. So they were having this very sweet conversation. And then after, you know, a while, Krishna said, my dear friend, did you bring me a gift? And Siddhama Vipra, he's so embarrassed because, you know, what he brought wasn't really worthy of kings. I mean, it was really simple wrapping of, you know, some chipped rice. So he's so shy and he's reluctant to even show what he brought. And then Krishna, he snatched it from him. Can you imagine that, like, Supreme Personality of Godhead who creates the universes? He is acting like, you know, like a little child, like so, you know, like he's so playful, so personal, so playful with his friend. So he snatched it from him. And he said, oh, thank you so much. He was so grateful. And he grabbed, you know, a little of that chipped rice and he started to eat. And he said, thank you so much, my dear friend. I'm sure this morsel of rice will not only please me, but the entire creation, indicating that he is actually the source of entire creation. And he was about to take a second bite, but Rukmini Devi, she said, my dear Lord, stop. She said, just that little bite that you honored this chipped rice is sufficient enough to provide extreme opulence for your devotee, not only in this life, but in the next one as well. So, very interesting interaction between this Brahmana and Lord Krishna. Very interesting. And Sudama Vipra, he spent an entire night in Krishna's palace and he felt like he is in Vaikuntha because essentially he was. So he was extremely happy and he didn't ask anything from the Lord. And next morning he left and he started walking back to his palace. And as he came closer to his residence, all of a sudden he looked and he couldn't even recognize what's happening. Basically, his cottage where he lived with his wife, it completely transformed. Instead of the cottage that was very, you know, in very poor condition, in need of repairs, there was an amazing palace. And there were gardens, they were beautiful, like lakes, waterfalls, you know, so many wonderful flowers, there were beautiful people, ladies and gentlemen walking around, musicians. And he was bewildered, like, how is it possible? How is it possible? So, I wanted to read to you his reflection, basically. So, as he walks in into this beautiful place that is now fully transformed, then he's starting to reflect. And this is really important because it connects to the verse we are actually discussing this morning. So he starts to think like this. From the beginning of my life, I have been extremely poverty-stricken. So what could be the cause of such great in sudden opulence. I do not find any cause other than the all-merciful, what? Glance, all-merciful glance of my friend Lord Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. Certainly these are gifts of Lord Krishna's causeless mercy. So that is a connection that I found. Basically, as we described in the verse we are talking this morning, how Lord glances and he can create entire universe, material energy is activated and creates all the planets and all the life gets into the motion. So we can see in this case how Brahmana Sudama Vipra, he actually also associated Lord's glance, Lord's merciful glance, to this amazing transformation in his life. And it is interesting to note how that faith of devotee is so powerful. Because materialistic people, they cannot understand. I remember many years ago, when I joined the temple, after a month or two, basically, I called two of my friends, and we spent like 4 years in high school together, and they were my best friends. And I told them, why don't you come to Sunday Feast? And, you know, there's so much fun, and it's, you know, wonderful prasadam. And they came. And as we were talking after prasadam, basically, I kind of wanted to show them some pictures because they couldn't really understand much philosophy, and I didn't know much either. I was brand new bhakta. So I was, you know, I was kind of showing them photos in books, and and to me it was just so fascinating. As a new bhakta, I'm sure maybe you have similar experience. You really don't understand what's in the book, but when you look at the picture, it's so amazing. Like, these photos are so amazing that devotees painted. And as we were going through the pages, so finally came that painting where Lord Vishnu is lying in the causal ocean, and from his navel comes the lotus flower, and then Brahmaji sits on that lotus. And I said, look, this is how the universe is created. And they looked at me and they thought, oh my God, what happened to our friend? So for them it was just like, you know, beyond like, you know, any imagination. But I thought, like, what's the problem? Like, it's just, you know, Krishna can do anything and look how he created the universe. It was just, to me it was so normal somehow. I liked what I saw. Anyhow, my friends never came back. I tried to call them back, you know, a few weeks later, and actually they got deported because we were serving in the military. They got transferred to completely another part of country, and unfortunately I never heard back from them. So the faith is so important. And how does one create that faith? That is a really good question. Sometimes it comes due to definitely pious activities, good association, but sometimes it also happens due to the force, like life essentially forces you to believe. One time, there was a soldier in the war, and he was fighting deep in a forest with, you know, basically his brigade, military brigade. And as the battle was intensifying, his side was losing. His side was actually losing. And they started to retreat. They were realizing there is no hope in this fight. We lost this fight, we better retreat. And as they were trying to escape, somehow he separated from the rest of the group. And essentially they were running for their life. And as he was running and running through the woods and the enemies approaching, a very, very fearful situation. all of a sudden he realized his energy is so depleted that he can't even run anymore. And he looked around and he saw, kind of like in a distance, hidden under the trees, a little cave. And he came to realization, I cannot outrun the enemies coming. I can try to hide and pray to God and see what happens. So he went into the cave and basically it was just big enough for him to hide. And he kind of closed his eyes and started to pray, my dear God, please, please help me. If you do, I promise I will spend my remaining days on this planet serving you. And then he opened his eyes and he looked and he saw a spider. And he started thinking, what is this? I prayed to God for help and he sent me a spider? But he didn't know what to think. He was so afraid, he was shaking. I'm sure maybe at some point in your life you had a fearful situation where you actually shake, your body's literally trembling, you can't stop it. And he can see he can hear and he can see the enemies closing in, getting closer and closer. And he is completely sweating in fear. And again he looked and then all of a sudden he realized the spider is creating the web slowly. And he's just looking and in bewilderment. And by the time the enemy soldiers came close, the spider web actually closed in the entrance with his web. As the enemy came to that point where he was hiding, one of the enemy soldiers, he looked and he said, nobody came here, because if they came, this web would be broken. Keep going, keep going. We have to catch them. And this man is inside thinking, amazing, amazing. And he's still in shock, he's shaking. So, many years later, this same young man, actually he became an evangelist preacher. And he wrote very interesting words. He narrated that story publicly and he said, wherever God is present, this spider web becomes stone wall. Wherever God is absent, the stone wall becomes as a spider web. Means, you know, anybody can break in. So I was thinking how amazing, you know, life can teach you sometimes really powerful lessons. Powerful lessons. I would like to end with a beautiful poem by Bhaktivinod Thakur. He wrote so many wonderful poems in his Sharanagati. And I was looking, Sharanagati, it's such a beautiful name. I looked what it actually means. And it's kind of broken in two words. Sharanam, shelter, and agati, to kind of go to. Is that correct, Brian? Something like that. So Sharanagati means actually surrender, taking shelter, surrendering to. So Bhaktivinod Thakur basically, he described in his introductory song, there are six principles or six ways of surrender. And he said, the first one is danya, humility. Second one is atmani vedana, dedication of the self. The third one is Goptritve Varana, acceptance of the Lord as only maintainer. The fourth one is the consciousness of Avesya Rakshibe Krishna. Krishna will surely protect me, which is Vishwasa, faith in Krishna's palana, protection. Fifth one is Bhakti Anukula Matra Karyera Svikara, execution of only those acts favorable to pure devotion. And six, Bhakti Pratikula Bhava Vajana Gikara, renunciation of conduct adverse to pure devotion. Such a beautiful poem. You can find it in KK Songs online. It's a beautiful. And basically, Bhakti, you know this saying, Shinanda Kumar, the youthful son of Nanda Maharaj, hears the prayers of anyone who takes refuge in him by the sixfold practice of surrender. Bhaktivinoda prostrates himself at the feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Sanatana Goswami, places his throat between his teeth, and clasps their lotus feet with his hands. Weeping and weeping, he tells them, I am certainly the lowest of men. Oh, please make me the worthiest by teaching me the ways of Sharanagati. Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. If anybody would like to offer any comment, any critique, anything is welcome. Yes, Prana Govinda Prabhu.
Well, there are a few. One is, you mentioned 9th chapter Bhagavad Gita. And the question Arjuna asked, or you can put it that way, why it is king of knowledge? What is the glorious of this confidential knowledge? So in the verse, actually yesterday we were talking about it. It says, Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Prathaka Abhagamam Dharmam Sakshat. So it is most confidential and glorious in our king of knowledge, because it actually purifies pavitra and it transforms the heart and shushukam, and you will feel satisfied because these three things. That's why it is most confidential and glorious, and also it's transcendental. Uttamam means above the three modes. Another point, you're narrating the 80 chapter of Krishna book about Viprasudama. I remember many years back we read. There's a famous verse actually, because when Sudama Vipra came to Dwarka, even the maid servant, Mother Rukmini, had a 300 maid servant his father sent as a dowry with Krishna. They were surprised, as you narrated very nicely, how can Supreme Lord, whose wife is Mahalakshmi, they are not Lakshmi, Mahalakshmi, because it's Mahavaikuntha Dwarka, his best friend doesn't have a cloth to wear properly. It has a knots, you know, everywhere, because he's so poor. Didn't have a proper clothes even. How is possible? So they kind of like a, I don't know, gossip or talks around amongst them. How is this? They never saw any friend of Krishna who he embraced has such a poverty stricken. So that question was raised by Sanatana Goswami, and he answered. You can look at in I believe text 34, 10.80.34. Naham ijja prajatibham tapasa upaswami nava tusyeham sarvabhutatma guru shushushayagata. Then Krishna spoke to all the whole audience with the queen and all the maid servant. You should know who my friend is. Guru shushushayagata. We pleased our guru together. How do you, and then Krishna says, Naham Ijja Prajapitvam. Even if you follow the Varnashram, you do the first class worshipping, you do Brahmacharya, you are first class Grihastha, nothing satisfies me as it satisfies when somebody pleases his Guru. My friend, he pleased his Guru. But the question is still not answered there, doubt is still there. So when you please Guru, three results, Krishna said in that verse, that his memory will remain fresh. Whatever he learned from Guru, it will remain fresh whole life. Whatever he wants, he will get it. Okay, so the second answer is that Viprasudam, every day he would wake up from the bed and he would pray, my Lord Krishna, you gave a chance to remain as your friend in the school. Do not send anything today that will bewilder me. Let me remain poor and poverty-stricken so I will have no desire to enjoy. I don't want that impression of enjoying. Because he was praying this, his wife did not know. He maintained a poverty-stricken life. And Krishna said at that time, I live in Dwarka, but every day I would go there and guard his house that nobody brings anything because he's so devoted. Automatically attracts Lakshmi's mercy. People would bring so much food and dress and all these things, and I had to tell them, no, he doesn't need anything. I would disguise in a form of like depriving them. So otherwise I was also disturbed, you know, like what kind of devotee will become that property stricken? No, it is his desire. His wife did not know.
Thank you, thank you. That's a really wonderful insight that I wasn't aware that actually Krishna was guarding him because he was praying in such a way. And actually that chapter ends basically after he did receive the that transforming opulence and so on. Essentially his prayer, like you said, was, my dear Lord, may I always be your servant life after life and remain your friend, and may I never be bewildered by the material opulence. Yes. So his mentality did not shift, not even inch, even despite receiving, you know, all the wealth.
But I want to say just what his wife prayed, it's also perfect, it's bona fide, according to Acharyas. She wanted to serve his demon,
yeah,
her husband, happened to be her husband. So that's also bona fide.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. Yes, Madhu.
Thank you, Govinda. It was always fun to hear your class because it's always has nice stories, relevant stories, easy way. Your first, in the very start of your class, you mentioned about the experiment, about the fish. How I understood what you were saying is that because the fish is in the water, and therefore it will not search for water, and then you explained, or at least how I understood was that because we're in the material cycle of birth and death, we will not search for a way out of it? Is that the, I was trying to understand the point you are making.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for actually bringing this wonderful question. I meant to actually elaborate more on this point, but I kind of ran out of time. We find in the beginning of this chapter that we are actually closing in one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada explains how this material universe actually provides two facilities. And he said, first, for those living entities that have a tendency to lord over the material energy, essentially it provides facility for them to execute that tendency. Now, the second facility is there for those who are essentially the Prabhupada is specifically saying, following the Vedic sound. I found that very interesting. Following the Vedic sound, like Bhagavatam and other scriptures, and who are desiring to become free from material, repetition of birth and death. So both facilities are there in the material universe. So I thought, like, this story is kind of giving a very nice similarity, because fish has no way to ever finding the reality different than the water, same as conditioned soul. However, the spiritual master, Krishna sends his messenger to basically go into the water, into the material world, and inform the fish, which is us, swimming in material energy. And basically, he gives that information freely. And some fish, they decide, hey, this makes sense, I should take it up. I should check it out, at least. But then some other fish, they have no faith, and they say, oh, I've been in this water for a long time, I prefer to stay here. So that freedom is always there for the conditioned soul to make up its mind and decide. That's a free will that we have. I don't know if that answers the question.
Yes, Prabhu, thank you. I guess my further thought on the whole thing is that we have a certain sense of reality, what we think reality, just like the fish is thinking. So when we approach the spiritual realm, I'm just speaking for myself, we approach it with the same reality that we are used to. I guess how to break that reality. I mean, I guess we're given the process, but sometimes it's hard. We approach with what we think, what we know.
Yeah.
And then we're not able to pierce through that spiritual realm and to actually understand that it is different than the reality of what we think reality is.
Yeah, definitely. And when you said it's difficult to break out of that conception that's so deeply ingrained in our consciousness. And the only solution I could think of is good association. Really, other than that, on our own strength, we are kind of powerless to perceive things that are beyond our intellect. But in good association, things get revealed to us, and Krishna, with the torch of knowledge, he illuminates and guides us.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think
I was appreciating when you were talking about the glance of the Lord. I remember that when Nanda's husband, Jadalaksha, he would send out emails every day just picking up little things or big things that Srila Prabhupada from lectures and the morning walks. So one of them was about Krishna's glance. And you know, it's depressing sometimes when you see what's happening with the environment, the rivers, the oceans are being polluted, that so many species of life are dying off, that the temperature is rising, and the ocean temperature is rising so many. But in this particular section that he sent, it was saying that Krishna's glance could immediately take care of all of that. Mm-hmm. It could just purify everything, bring everything back to its original condition. And so it made me very hopeful, to read that. So thank you for reminding me of the potency of Krishna's glance. It's so nice.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, we will stop here. Thank you so much. Garantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanandi.